We are in 2 Peter, the second chapter. 1 Peter, the second chapter. Thank you. And we're going to continue our class on this. And I will tell you right now, I had trouble with my printer last night. And there are gaps in words on my notes here, because the printer skipped places. So if I have to look a little harder at my notes at times, that explains it, to make sure I'm reading it correctly. We finished up last time in the second chapter of 1 Peter. We're going to continue on, starting with the 11th verse. When we get on down into some of the later verses in this chapter, we're going to take a whole long section of it at one time instead of breaking it down two or three verses at a time. Verse 11, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against your soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that, whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may be your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation." What is our normal, what is a normal human reaction when someone attacks you, whether it's verbally? Not too many of us have had to worry about attacks physically. Some have, but when somebody gets real aggressive with you in speech or accuses you of something, what's our normal reaction? Defend yourself. Strike back, whether physically or verbally, depending upon the occasion and the situation. But that human nature of protection, protecting yourself, protecting your reputation. Now, if somebody comes against you or says something against you that isn't true, and this is what these people were facing. They were being accused of all sorts of things, the first century church. What were some of the things that they were accused of? Do I hear a voice? Well, cannibalism. That was the worst. They were accused of cannibalism. Because on the first day of the week, what did they eat? The body of Christ. And they took it, non-believers, not understanding, not knowing what was going on. They took this symbolic bread that represents the body of Christ and the fruit of the vine that represents the blood of Christ, and they were partaking of that, and non-believers, the people that didn't know anything about Christianity, about Christ, took it that they were eating literal flesh and blood. So they were being accused of cannibalism. They were being accused of all sorts of things. And here, what is Peter telling them in how to react against this? Good works. Let your conversation, or let your way of life, speak for itself. Also calls them what up in the 11th verse? He calls them here in King James, they're called strangers and pilgrims. The English Standard Version uses the word sojourners. We are sojourners on earth. The connotation of that is this is a transient place. Friday, Barbara and I leave to go to Texas. We are going to be back on late sometime, if all goes as planned, on the 3rd of January. While we are in Texas, we will be sojourners. We will be there temporarily for a purpose. But that's not our home. We're pilgrims. What does a pilgrim do? What is a pilgrim doing by definition of a pilgrim? The early pilgrims to the United States, what were they doing? Pilgrims, pardon? Seeking a new land. A pilgrim seeks new land. The Western migration after the Civil War in the 1870s and 80s, those were pilgrims seeking new land. We are sojourners on earth. The first century church were sojourners. They were pilgrims seeking something else, looking for something better. And we have, as they have, a war to fight. And that war, in many ways, is against ourselves. We are tempted with the desires of the flesh. And everybody here has been tempted by them. Sometimes that desire might be too much candy. Sometimes that desire can be far worse. It can be to attack someone that we don't like. It can be carnal. But we war against this as much as we do battle in warfare. We battle against terrorists nowadays. Well, we battle against Satan. That's the battle we have to worry about the most. That's the battle that we have to fight against, because we are not here permanently. We are seeking a new land. We are pilgrims. And that's what he's telling these people here. You're just sojourners. You're just people seeking something new. But you have to war against those fleshly lusts so you can get there. Conversation, your conduct. By our good works, we will glorify God. Now he uses the term in the day of visitation. And I believe what he's speaking about here is the visitation of those people. Now remember who he's writing to and what they're going through. They're going through horrible persecutions, and they dreaded on their front door or a kick in the door and knocking it down. They dreaded that because they knew danger was at the door. That was the day of visitation, when people were coming to get them, to haul them out, to answer false accusations against false accusers, so they could be tortured and put to death, and their families. That's the day of visitation. Let your good works, let those glorify God when that time comes. And that lesson is still here for us today. Comments, questions over these two verses? Paul.
You've covered it fairly well, but you know, your natural tendency, if you're a stranger somewhere, is to naturally be looked at with a little suspicion right off the bat. If you're a pilgrim, and you're going to a new place, you're seeking a new land, and in these situations when they were fleeing persecution, wherever they were going, those folks would naturally look upon them as perhaps taking something from them. So, he's telling them the recipe for these natural things that will occur is to be good people. And that will overcome much of the suspicions and that people have of you.
Peter may be taking a longer view of this, it seems to me. I agree with you that they would be wary of persecution and the time that they might hear the knock on the door. But I think Peter may be looking forward to the day of visitation being the day of judgment, and that they might live their lives and conduct themselves so that they might be an influence on those around them, so that they might receive the word and be able to glorify God in the visitation. So it may be a longer view that Peter might be taking here too.
Several commentators, and like the opinions of men, they're split evenly pretty much down the middle. For the visitation against people coming to attack them, or the day of visitation being the return of Christ. It could be either one. I tend to think that it's visitation of the people making accusations and the danger they face, simply because this is why he's writing. Although an equally valid point could be made for the day of Christ's return. Anyone else? Okay, let's go on down to the 13th and the 14th verses right now. We're going to look at these maybe in a little different light. We're going to bring up a couple of points you may not, or you may have thought of also. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or unto governors as unto them that are sent by him, for the punishment of evildoers, and for the praise of them that do well. What are we told? What parable or what example did Christ give when he was confronted by authority to Rome or authority to God? Render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God. We have an obligation to be loyal to the government of the nation we are in, even if that the laws of that nation harm us. There are nations whose laws harm their own people. There are nations whose laws harm Christians. We see and hear more about that today than probably we have in many generations, decades probably. Render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God. Now, I'm going to ask some questions here, kind of off the point, but ones that I have thought about on a theoretical level. We are to be obedient to the government that God has allowed or has ensured that is in place wherever we are living, whether we were born there or whether we immigrate there. Can you engage in revolution against a government, as happened in the 1770s that formed this country? Take the 1860s and the American Civil War. There you get into a trickier point, because the South said, we're not opposing the North, we're just forming our own country. And you leave us alone and we'll leave you alone. Are you still obedient to the laws of the federal government or to the state governments? Now the question is, particularly, let's look at the American Revolution. At what point would your allegiance be required to change from the British Crown to the American government, based upon the outcome of that war? Or would it change? You want to twist your mind in a hundred knots? Think on those for a while. I've been thinking on them for years, and I still can't figure it out. I can take a very strict view of the gospel, but then I can say, but God doesn't put me in situations that I can't handle. So how am I supposed to handle this one? Paul's got a question, comment. Here, I'll just.
Well, God sets in order governments as He sees them. He has used other governments to overthrow a government at His choice. If you want to get real sticky about bowing down to Caesar, if He ordered to bow down to Him as a human ruler, would that be wrong? If He ordered you to bow down to Him as God or the God, that would be wrong. Human beings need a government, or God would not have established them. And I think that's one of the things that we need to, He says, submit. In the case of the Revolutionary War, when Britain gave up, you were under a new government. As a Christian, you can serve God, and it may be more difficult under some governments than others, and it may require sacrifices. But God sets in order the nations and the governments as He sees them, the way I see it.
Well, you're right there, and I agree with you. So let's go back to the Civil War. Yeah, I'm just going to take a bend on this because I need your help on this. We go back to the Civil War. Your state government withdraws from the Union. Is your allegiance to the state government or to the federal government? At the time of the Civil War started, people referred to the United States as the United States are. They didn't say the United States is. There's a huge difference in those two terms. Are we talking about the United States are or the United States is? Again, you can tie your head around this. I think, as Paul said, God sets things in order, and He uses governments for His purposes. Does anybody remember what Acts, the 5th chapter, the 29th verse says? And it's the conclusion of this. And Paul mentioned it. We ought to obey God rather than men. As Paul pointed out, if a government says, bow down to me, or a governor, a ruler says, bow down to me as God, that's one thing. If he says, bow down to me because I am the ruler of this country, that's entirely different. And we do that in our own fashion. When the president of the United States walks into a room, what is it customary to do? Stand up. Show honor. Show respect. Members of the armed forces, salute one civilian, the president of the United States. Honor to whom honor is due. God is the supreme. He is the one we honor the most. But we have to give civil governments our responsibility, our obedience. Thank you. Now, here's another thing. These people were facing things far more dangerous than what we're talking about in our lives. If you're driving along and the speed limit is 65 and you're doing 70, 72, 73, are you in obedience to man's laws? If you come up to that stop sign and you kind of pause and roll through it. You know, it's the little things that we don't often think about that we have to be obedient to, just as much as it's against the law to take a life unjustified, murder. Okay, I got off on my soapbox. I'm back. I'm off of it now. Governments are ordained by God to punish evildoers. Sometimes Christians get caught up in that. And we are to show that we are different based upon our conduct, that we are not evildoers. It's how we live, how we act. If your neighbors can't tell a difference between themselves and you, and they have no Christian values, what does that say about us? If our neighbors don't know that we're Christians, that's how these people were to differentiate themselves from the people that they were sojourning, whose countries they were sojourning in.
I knew there was a verse I was looking for, but Peter and Paul are consistent in this teaching. Paul said in Romans chapter 13 and verse 1, let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. And he goes on and talks about whoever resists the power resists God.
Now, it's a consistent theme throughout the New Testament is that we are to be obedient to civil governments. Except when the laws prevent us from being obedient to God. We ought to obey God rather than man. Anybody else? Any comments? Jack?
David, comment on Bible smuggling into China and behind the Iron Curtain when it was still here.
Spread the word.
He's talking about their personal behavior along here, and they were, as been mentioned, they were in much worse circumstances, and they had one authority in Rome, but they also had governors that were sent out, which is what he mentions here, and they would have been the people that they would have been dealing with. But the Christians, when they were prevented from worshiping in the ways that they knew they should, they went underground, a lot of them in those times, and met in secret, and that's what they should do. When we obey God rather than men, if there's a legitimate government that we are under in all other circumstances, then that is the time that we submit to the governments that are legitimate at the time, as long as they don't conflict with God's will.
I was just going to add, the example that we have is that Christians were killed all day long for their faith. Those first, second, third, fourth century Christians gave up their life because they wouldn't obey the form of government they had. Communist government was no different than the Roman government of the time that was killing Christians.
What are your thoughts on the question of the smuggling of the Bible? Because I've thought about that too, and I agree with your answer. we think about Paul and Silas going into Philippi in Acts 16. Philippi was a colony, and colonies had very special rules governing them, and they were posted on the gates, I believe, as you walked into the city. And among those was, no God but Caesar. Or there would not be any other religions brought into the city. Well, what did Paul and Silas do? They went right in there and started preaching. Because, as we say, we ought to obey God rather than men. We think also of the weightier matters of the law. Jesus himself said in Matthew 12 that there are some times when it's okay to break the Sabbath. If your animal's down in the ditch, mercy requires that you save the animal, even though that's work. The priest himself was working very hard on the Sabbath day, making those sacrifices. Jesus said he profanes the Sabbath, but it's okay, because the weightier matter of the law needs to be observed. And getting the word of God to people and preaching the gospel, what weightier matter could there be? If we can do it without lying outright, I think we can do it with a clear conscience.
Maybe my soapbox was a good idea. Any other comments before we go on? We're going to look at the 15th verse through the 19th verse, and we probably won't get all the way through those, but we'll start. For so is the will of God that with well-doing ye may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but to the forward. For this is thankworthy, if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. Again, obeying God rather than man, and how we live our lives, the conduct. New Testament, in a lot of the translations, the King James, they use the word conversation. But they're talking about how you live your life, your conduct. That is to put to silence foolish people, people that do not understand. If somebody comes up to you and says, well, you're doing such and such. Let me give you an example. I can't think of any other one. I know there are thousands. When my kids, and now my grandkids, are in high school, there is a problem in our schools with kids drinking. In Arizona, in Yuma, there was a bunch of kids cross the border into Mexico. It's only a few minutes' drive. It's not far. And they went across and they came back. They decided that since once they walked across the border and they got back to the pickup, that they were really too drunk to drive, so they put a 14-year-old girl behind the steering wheel and a bunch of them crawled into the back seat, into the back of the pickup. Arizona has a lot of roads that are built along the property lines where somebody had a section of land. And the road goes down that section and makes a 90-degree curve. Literally, a 90-degree corner at the corner of the section. And this 14-year-old girl came down, took the corner too fast, didn't know how to drive, threw somebody out, a high school student, and they were killed. I was president of the PTA. I went through the roof. We got doctors, we got the police, we got everybody and their mother, parents, and everything else, and we started a fight against teenage drunk driving, teenage drinking, period. A short time later, through a series of events, I was working with some of the high school students during school hours, and we finished the project, And I said, okay, guys, back to class. And I left, and they got in their vehicles and headed back to the school. So I thought. It later turned out they went over to one of the boys' houses, and they got drunk. And they said, well, Mr. Landis said we didn't have to go back to school, and we could go on over to my house. And somebody said, no, that didn't happen. We know him. He would not do that. Because of who I was, they knew those boys did not have permission to do that. I could name a number of other parents in that same area that had they been in my position, people would have said, well, yeah, they probably did. Tell them to take off from school. Send them home. How we live our lives. The conduct can put foolishness to silence. Simply because we are different. Or we should be different. Our neighbors, the people that know us that are not of the church, should know that we live differently. As, like I said, as the word is used, the conversation should be different. And that can be both literally our language should be different, but also our conduct. We are free from this burden of sin. Christ has made us free in that manner, but that freedom doesn't give us a license to go out and do whatever we want because we're free from sin. Well, I can't be damaged by sin, so I can do it all. Who said, God forbid? Paul, thank you. I can't even remember the verse now. But, quote it. Yeah, thank you. Should we continue in sin that grace may abound? No! The freedom from sin that we have by obedience to Christ is not a license to go out and live any way we want. Comments? Questions? It talks about honoring all men. How do we treat everybody we meet? What's that called? The golden rule. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. The golden rule. Rule. Now, the next statement is a little different. We are to honor everyone. But we are to do what to the brotherhood of Christ? Love the brotherhood. Love the brotherhood. I should have, and I'd better have, love for every member of the Lord's body in the entire world. And if we have a problem with that, we have a problem. Now, there is a difference between the love that we're talking about here and liking somebody. There are members of the church whose personality grate on me. And I'm sure that I grate on some of you. We are to have what type of love? There are, remember, as the language this was written at, love came, they had different words for different types of love. What is this love talking about? Brotherly love? Filio. Filio. Is it filio? Yeah, never mind the technical terms. How do you love your brothers and sisters? As Christ loved you. As Christ loved you. So as Christ loved me, I have a responsibility to love the brotherhood, love the church of Christ and all members in it. Honor people, what is due them. We're told that in Romans, the 13th chapter, in the 7th verse. Give honor to whom honor is due. What if someone is due no honor? How do I treat them? As Christ would.
God doesn't wish that every soul is precious.
Yes. Every soul is precious to God. Even those we don't like, yeah. I may not like somebody, but their soul is still precious. And we're about out of time. We're going to finish up there. Barbara and I will be leaving Friday for Texas. And we will be gone next Sunday. And we will get home on January 3rd. And it will probably be fairly late. So I've talked to Paul about it to make sure that there's somebody to teach the class the next two Sundays. I don't know if they want to continue with 1 Peter, and they are more than welcome. Different insight is always welcome. But we will see you on the 4th of January, hopefully.